Okay, Harry Potter fans, welcome back to another episode of Chatty Potter. Today I am joined by my friend Ryan, who has got the best podcast voice ever. We are going to talk about loving Harry Potter as adults, and also since Ryan is an actor, we will talk about the child actors of the Harry Potter series, as well as the filmmaking process that goes into the films. So, stay tuned for that, but really quickly before we jump in, you can support the podcast on Patreon if you'd like, if you enjoy these episodes and you'd like to support us and help us make more content and better content. It's only £5 a month, that's patreon.com/chattypotter, and it really, really helps us out. So please consider that if you can, if not, enjoy the episode. Cool. Okay, Ryan, thank you for joining me, mate. Do you want to start by introducing yourself, talking about what you do on the internet?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, first of all. Hello, everyone. My name is Ryan J. Berta, and I guess I'm a TikTok content creator and have been during these crazy times with the pandemic. An actor, musical theater, a magician, and a cosplayer who cosplays Sirius Black.
Nice. Very cool. And I have to say, from seeing your content on TikTok, there are a few people whose voices I feel like lend themselves to things like podcasts perfectly. You and Don Marshall have two of the greatest podcast voices on the platform. So I'm very excited to have you on.
That means a lot to me. Don's wonderful too. And yeah, I could listen to him speak for hours.
Mm-hmm. Well, I categorize the two of you the same. So I hope you take that as the compliment it's meant to be. So you cosplay Sirius, you're an actor. Do you want to talk about your relationship with Harry Potter, how it's sort of been in and out of your life growing up, things like that?
Yeah, of course. I think I, like a lot of people, was just kind of blown away by this franchise that came into our lives, and one that introduced magic into our world as being something really tangible and beautiful. I remember the books coming out and, you know, waiting up for the late night releases and being so excited for them. My parents at one point actually bought me the sixth book, but I didn't have the fifth one yet.
Oh,
and
no.
I was like, well, I need the fifth one. So I went to the store that day, bought the fifth one, read it in a day. I don't know how. But I did. You got it because you need to know what happens.
Yeah.
Harry Potter was always something for me that made me feel accepted and understood. And I think that's something that a lot of people experienced. It was a world that was created that allowed all of us to see a version of ourselves in, you know, whether it was you were the kid who was the youngest in a large family who was always kind of overlooked by the older brothers or sisters, or you know, someone who didn't grow up knowing their parents. There was a character that all of us could identify with, and it was beautiful to have that growing up and to be able to enter into adulthood and find a community of people who have clearly been so positively affected by this beautiful series is truly amazing.
It is. It's sort of timeless. Like that's, I feel like that's the thing that's really been hammered home since I joined TikTok, because I joined it like you in the pandemic.
Right.
And being in your 20s and what people in my life pre-TikTok would probably have called unhealthily interested in a series like this that primarily was targeted towards children, to find a community of 20-somethings, even people in their 30s who are really into the Harry Potter franchise, even people beyond their 30s, you know, and like the fact that we all pull so many things from it. It's not just the stuff that's aimed at kids in the stories that's appealing, right? There's so many more bits in there that we can grasp onto.
Yes, absolutely. It's wonderful because it's a reminder that you should never grow up and you should never let anyone tell you that the things that you like aren't worth liking. You know, if we can have a little bit of light in the world and it comes from Harry Potter or it comes from Lord of the Rings or Disney, that's beautiful, and we should never let anyone take that away from us.
100%. 100%. You mentioned in your intro that you're a magician as well.
Yeah.
Just, I didn't know that about you. I find that really interesting. What kind of magic do you do?
So predominantly I do close-up magic. I did work on a cruise ship as a magician for a year before COVID and was doing a big stage illusion show. That's actually, wait, other side, my hat from the show behind me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I grew up doing magic and like cards and coins and levitation and things like that. And I think that with Harry Potter, they kind of came around the same time. And me being able to do magic, I was like, I am a wizard. Oh, it's so cool. And those two worlds really came together beautifully. And definitely, I think because I love them both individually, it has enhanced my love for them together as well.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there's definitely correlation. Like I had a huge interest in magic, like through my like mid to late teens. And then I picked it up again, like in my mid 20s for like a couple of months, just like a couple of card tricks and stuff. Mm-hmm. Probably not anywhere near to the extent that you do it. Like I wouldn't call myself a magician, but you know, sitting there watching YouTube videos, teaching you how to do like the three card at Monty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like just things like that. Like I found it so interesting. I wonder if there is a correlation between people who like the Wizarding World and Harry Potter and take an interest in that.
Because magic, I think, is also one of those things that no matter what age you are, when you see a magic trick and you have no idea how it is done, it takes you back to that childlike wonder of believing in dragons and believing mm-hmm. in these creatures. And magic does that. It's like, I have no explanation. So this idea of the things beyond what we understand has to be real,
which I think 100%. It's like, it's fantastical. It's what we actually, my girlfriend and I went to a wedding not too long ago, and they had a magician going around in the evening part of it, like as the entertainment. And it was the first time I'd seen like a proper magician in and amongst people, as opposed to like, I saw Penn and Teller like in Vegas on stage, which was amazing. Right. But seeing someone close up mingling, doing tricks like that. And it was so cool. Like just that moment where it's happening to you and you're just like, mm-hmm. oh my word, what is that? How on earth has that happened?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why I love that style so much, is because it's not what a lot of people think of. They think of, you know, tuxedo, big stage mm-hmm. illusion, birds and stuff. And when it's happening in your hands right in front of you, and, you know, there are no camera tricks, there are no this or that, it's so much more intimate. And I really love that it's like off the cuff, because like even in that moment when you were like, oh, I didn't know you were a magician, that's uh-huh. when if we were in person, I'd be like, well, here we go, I'm gonna show
you. Let me show you.
Yeah,
100%. I feel like there's an element of loving the magic close-up, like interacting with a magician like that, because I feel like I'm switched on. And I feel like I've learned a couple of card tricks myself, so I feel like I'd know what to look out for, and you still can't spot it. And I'm just like, I feel like I'm Penn and Teller who have been fooled on their show. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, I still have moments, because I've been doing magic for over 23 years now. And when I see a trick and I don't know, it's like, oh, I'm upset, but that also feels so good.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine, like, as your ability gets higher, like, being tricked is probably harder. So when it happens, it's probably so fulfilling.
It's amazing. It's a great feeling. And again, it's that childlike wonder, that thing that we're all trying to get back to. Don't grow up. It's a trap.
100%. I love that. Circling back to Harry Potter, then, do you want to talk us through sort of your favorite parts of the series, favorite books, maybe favorite moments, anything like that?
Yeah, for me, definitely Prisoner of Azkaban was a big turning point, both for the book and for the movie. I think as much as there was always darkness in Harry Potter in the first two, the third one is where we really settled into like this unease within the world with Sirius Black escaping. Spoiler alerts, he's a good guy. and I've always been kind of drawn to darker characters. I like the complexity and trying to understand the humanity in them. And so the entire time that I was reading Prisoner of Azkaban and hearing about Sirius Black, but not seeing him, you know, it created this beautiful story that I was so intricately wanting to dig apart. And then when we learn the tragedy of his backstory and what's really going on, it just took this character and fleshed him out so beautifully. And ever since then, Sirius Black was my favorite because his past is just so tortured. And when the movies came out, I originally remember thinking that I hated that movie at first.
Really?
For a while. It took me a long time to kind of adjust to it, because Chris Columbus had created this beautiful, beautiful Harry Potter world, and I would say it was very bright. And then of course in the third movie it got darker. They started wearing street clothes. They went from, you know, red and yellow to like maroon and mustard yellow.
Yeah.
And for a while, I was like, well, why did this happen? Why is the world that I know and love completely different? But then when I kind of saw that the entire new world of Harry Potter was going to be like that and could just focus on the movie, I think the third is one of the most beautiful in the franchise. I think the way that Alfonso directed it and shot it with all of these images of going through the clocks and mm-hmm. that representation of time, which were having right in front of us the whole time, but then we only realize is there once Hermione brings in the Time Turner. It's just so brilliant, and the music and Lupin, that introduction of that character mm-hmm. as well. It gives us that sense of family that Harry never had in the first two, but it's so tragic because there's a separation where it's his father's family, not his family, but it's still kind of his.
Absolutely, yeah. I think you're right. There's a few things that you've said there that I want to touch on. I think you're absolutely right. Like the tonal shift just of the story of the Prisoner of Azkaban. Like, I think in the Chamber of Secrets and the Philosopher's Stone, you've got the antagonist, you've got Voldemort. He's evil for the sake of being evil. He's just a generic baddie, right? And I feel like the Prisoner of Azkaban brings in friends betraying each other. It brings in like corruption within the government, like not hearing out Hagrid's appeal, the execution and the joy that certain people take in it. I feel like it's much more relatable evil that you start to touch base with, as opposed to far more removed, maniacal, evil sorcerer wants to commit genocide and kill a child. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah. It's such a important and powerful use of evil when it's something that, as you articulated, we could experience in the real world. I think some of the best villains are the ones that are very much like people who we experience in our real lives.
Absolutely. I feel like that's why people find Umbridge so compelling as a villain, right? Mm-hmm. Because we all know someone who will use their power in that sort of corrupt, self-serving way. That almost sounded like an Umbridge impression. Very close. The other thing that you touched on was Alfonso Cuarón's direction mm-hmm. of The Prisoner of Azkaban. And I have to say, I think it's the best directed of the series. I feel mm-hmm. like, apart from the end frame, which interestingly is a freeze frame, every other shot in the movie you could pause and it would be a work of art. Like, you could pause at any moment and frame it and it would go on your wall, except when they do the freeze frame at the end for some reason. But I just think it's beautiful. Yeah. And, like, personally, I don't know about you, as an actor, you probably know a lot more about the ins and outs of production and stuff. But personally, I would have loved to have seen him direct the rest of it. Or do you think it holds up better because it was his only one?
You know, I think with Harry Potter, I kind of feel too... things simultaneously, that I look at as a giant piece, you know, eight films, but then I also like to look at it individually. Mm-hmm. In particular, the fact that we went from Prisoner of Azkaban to Goblet of Fire, and that there was such a directorial shift.
Yeah.
I really would have loved to see a director be able to continue with the world. I feel mm-hmm. that the biggest shifts in this series for me were between 2 and 3, of course, because there was that shift in the world.
Yeah.
But we kind of had that establishing Chris Columbus world that was created. And then between 3 and 4, because the director, you know, he didn't read the source material, and I don't think he treated it with the care and depth that Alfonso did. Mm-hmm. Really, because his work on Harry Potter was my favorite, would have loved to see what he could have done had he been given, you know, the entirety of the rest of the piece to work with, because he just created, like you said, some beautiful artistic things that live rent-free in my brain.
100%, yeah. Interestingly, I don't know if you watched the New Year sort of special, the reunion. Yeah. I found the parts where the directors were talking about their movies that they did mm-hmm. particularly interesting, particularly, I always forget his name, the guy that did Number 4.
I can see his face, the glasses, but I can't remember his name either.
Yeah, like he seemed to talk in a way where he wanted it to be of the tone of like regular 14, 15 year olds in and around school, mm-hmm. right? So like almost like a juvenility to it, if that's a word, whilst touching on the more sort of serious topics of the Triwizard Tournament. And I feel like, considering it had already got so dark from The Prisoner of Azkaban, it felt mm-hmm. like... it felt almost like the other way around, right? He should have maybe done maybe the Chamber of Secrets, which is slightly dark, well, a lot darker than the Philosopher's Stone, eases mm-hmm. you in towards the themes of the Prisoner of Azkaban. But you're right, it does just feel a little jarring.
Yeah, and of course, you know, I think Harry Potter fans and any fan of a book series translating into film is going to have a lot of nitpicking, because this is left out, this is left out. And I think of all the transitions from book to film, the fans have the most to say about Goblet of Fire, you know, with what happened to the Quidditch World Cup. Where was Winky? Where was this? There's a lot of things that I think people missed in that, and rightfully so. Is it still a beautiful film that I cherish? Absolutely, I do. But there was a lot of things from the book that I really missed in that one.
Yeah, I guess it is tough as well, because not only did the director not read it, it's the first book that jumped to that length, right? We go from like 300 and something pages in The Prisoner of Azkaban to 636, if memory serves, in The Goblet of Fire. Like, to keep the movie around the same length, that is a lot that you have to drop. So I feel like it's the first instance that Harry Potter fans saw that happen. And so it's very easy for us to jump down their throat. Like, you cut this, you cut that. You don't hear it so much, I feel like, about The Order of the Phoenix. Like, the odd scenes, but not such a gripe with the movie as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as you said, it naturally is going to happen. And that's why I did enjoy that they split the last book into two chapters so that we could get a little bit more out of it. But yeah, when you have that transition from the small books to the mammoth sized, you're going to have to cut some things. I always found it funny because I remember seeing an interview of that director and he's like, oh, have you seen the size of the book? I was always like, have you seen the fifth one?
Yeah, no, I love that. That's so funny. Is there, while we're on that topic, are there any particular scenes that stand out to you that you wish you'd seen but didn't get?
I think one of the biggest things for me that I wish that I'd got was Peeves.
Yes.
Peeves was just a wonderful character. And to have a kind of like villain, not villainous, but mischievous character that Harry has to look out for and deal with, while you also have Filch, who they are, you know, butting heads. I think that would have been so wonderful. And I grew up playing the computer games, and Peeves was always one of the ones that when I interacted with him, I was like, oh, it's Peeves. And it was one of my favorite parts. So I really would have loved to see Peeves. I think that's my biggest. How about yourself?
For me, the biggest thing that was missing was Voldemort's backstory in The Half-Blood Prince. Like, because The Half-Blood Prince is my favorite book, and a lot of it is for that reason. Like, one of my big criticisms of the series as a whole is that the primary villain isn't that villainous. I just don't feel like we have enough to really be scared of him or understand him. He feels very, very one-dimensional. And I feel like The Half-Blood Prince is the only chance we get to like flesh him out and like realize, okay, he's not just a maniac who wants to live forever for the sake of it and kill a child just because of his pursuit for power. Like, we get his backstory with his parents, with the Gaunts and his lineage, with what he was like at the orphanage and at school. And all of that was cut out of the movie. And whilst I still love The Half-Blood Prince movie because I think it's the funniest and the most lighthearted, and I feel like it sets us up perfectly for the dark ending of the Deathly Hallows, feel like one of the key elements of it was Voldemort's backstory, and missing that, not quite unforgivable, but close. Like, I feel like if I were to put a hierarchy together of all the elements of The Half-Blood Prince I'd want included, it's like top three, if not top five, you know?
Absolutely, and such an important part, because being able to understand your villain to a degree of depth is so important, as opposed to just, as you said, creating a character that we hate. And seeing the humanity, I think it's always interesting too, especially when we see a villain from childhood and can understand how the boy became the monster. It would have been amazing.
Yeah, especially like, I don't know, like, I'd almost want like an Aronofsky spin-off of Voldemort, like, descending into, like, manipulating more people, descending into the dark arts, getting more maniacal, his face contorting as he, like, sinks into these evil sort of forms of magic. I feel like that's such a compelling part of the whole story, because, like I said, for six books, Voldemort is just an evil guy trying to kill Harry for God knows what reason, a pursuit of power, maybe.
Right.
We've gone down a hole of directing movies, but I'm interested to get your take as an actor on the acting of Harry Potter, because there's something I've always found interesting. I feel like child actors are always so hit and miss, and so casting 11-year-olds must be a big, big risk. And I want to know, like, as an actor, how do you think they are acting-wise as children, as they grow up? Like, do you think they would have ticked the boxes that casting directors would hope they would have ticked so many years later?
Yes. So firstly, the idea of child actors is fascinating to me because I think with time, they have only gotten better. You know, like I see people like in Stranger Things, you know, or It. Yes. Like, all these kids are better than I am. What am I doing? But of course, you know, the Golden Trio all kind of being more on the unknown side at that point in time, they had done some things here and there. It is a risk. And I think they aged and grew into the characters beautifully. You know, when you go back and even watch the first film, they're still doing a wonderful job. I, in particular, have always felt like Rupert was exceedingly strong from the get-go. I thought that he was my standout of the three.
Interesting. I feel like a lot of people say Hermione more often than any of the other two, but that's really interesting.
I did enjoy Emma Watson, and Emma Watson, my apologies. And she was that character. She really was. And maybe that's why there was always like, I was like, oh, that's just her.
Sure.
You know, the three of them are really great together though. And they really brought out the best in each other. And, you know, to do any kind of acting at any point in your life is a challenge, especially when you're working with dark material. But to be a child and have to carry this franchise while you're also trying to grow up, you know, and that I found that fascinating watching the special and kind of seeing them talk about that. Like, we didn't really grow up. We just were shoved into this world for the rest of our lives. And I think they were able to handle it beautifully. You know, we won't always know the ins and outs of what happened, but I think for being children thrown into this world, they created some beautiful art. And you know, it goes beyond the trio, you know, like Neville, it's so amazing. Tom Felton as a villain, because I remember seeing him in The Borrowers at first and then seeing him do this. I was like, whoa.
Was like, he in The Borrowers before he was in Harry Potter?
Yeah, he was Pea Green. There was actually a lot of Harry Potter crossover because there was also Arthur Weasley was in The Borrowers and a couple other characters as well.
Oh, that's I've never seen it. That's but I obviously know the name. So that's so interesting.
Right. Great little film.
Okay, I'll have to watch it. You're right, though. There were so many child actors, I guess, which is... the more I see them, actually, particularly Daniel Radcliffe, the more I see him in other roles as he gets older, the more I just think he was born to play Harry. Like, he's sassy and sarcastic and dry, but in his serious moments, still great and still a bit angsty, like... I think he's brilliant. I actually feel like he was maybe let down by the writing of the movies because I don't think they brought out that sassy side of Harry enough. It's one of the reasons I love The Half-Blood Prince the most, like, well, one of the most, because I feel like he's at his sassiest then. And we see glimpses of it in the movie. Sorry, say it again.
You see that kind of, that bit of James in him more.
Yes. 100%. Yeah. Like when he's, the scene where he takes Felix Felicis in the film, I feel like that is peak Harry. That amazing. And I feel like Dan was like born to do that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was wonderful to see you, because you mentioned the writing, that as the writing kind of fleshed out more, that he was really able to spread his wings and soar with it. You know, his work with Gary Oldman for me was always astounding.
Amazing.
And to see that transition from the third and then into the fifth. I will never get over that scene where Sirius goes through the veil and you just see Dan screaming, because it's one of those moments where as an actor, how closely you bleed the lines between acting and reality, and
sure,
evident in that.
There are a lot of scenes actually that are emotionally, I guess that, like, you don't necessarily put Harry Potter down for being that emotionally heavy, but like the scenes like Hermione getting tortured by Bellatrix, like Ron losing his cool at Harry in the tent, like shouting your parents are dead at him, like particularly in the last few movies, there are these moments that just like really do attack your emotions.
Absolutely. You're instantly reminded, like, hey, this is a children's movie that you grew up with, but we're not children anymore. You know, you've grown up with them and you're seeing it right in front of you. And it tears at my heartstrings every time. Like, as soon as you mentioned that line with Ron, I was like I can see it. And it's such a testament to how they have grown as actors, to see them be able to take these darker and heavier motifs and really run with them.
100%, 100%. Speaking of them as actors and the fact that you're an actor, if you had the choice of any role, what would you take?
Sirius Black.
Sirius Black?
Yeah. I'm just so enthralled by the entire character and idea of Sirius Black, for a couple of reasons. I mentioned earlier, I really like dark characters and complex things, and the idea of him having a seed of insanity kind of inside him in losing his friends and watching what happened with Peter Pettigrew and then spending all those years in prison, just working with that kind of dark character, or a character a la the Joker, you know, those dark things. But knowing inside he has such a pure and loving heart for his friends, because, you know, James took him in when he was 16 and that was his family. And to have Harry, you know, be his family. And I think one of the things that I also have always been fascinated with Sirius is that Sirius is so cool. Like, he's such a cool and popular guy. And I never...
Effortlessly.
Yeah, he just struts cool. Like, imagine the way he is, the way he carries himself. He is a cool guy who you want to be best friends with. And that was always something that I was like, yeah, I wish I was that. I wanted long hair when I was younger and stuff. And he just was who he is. Mm-hmm. And didn't apologize. And I love that about him.
Amazing. Well, I mean, you do exude Sirius, at least your online persona, like what I've seen of you. If you were to ask me, who do you think Ryan would be in Harry Potter? Like, Sirius, straight away. So if you don't think you exuded that cool guy energy before, you certainly do now.
I appreciate that.
You're welcome. What about the children? If you were cast from a younger age, any of the sort of kids or students you think you would like to play?
Yeah, well, I think anyone will tell you, like, of course I want to play Harry Potter and, you know, take on that challenge and everything. But for me, yeah, the standout character for the children has always been Ron. And I recently did a this or that Harry Potter video, and I was like, do you choose Ron or Hermione? And I chose Ron. And a lot of people were like, how can you choose Ron over Hermione? Ron is such a fierce friend and so kind and loving and giving. He comes from a family where, being the youngest of all the brothers, he lives in the world of hand-me-downs and getting nothing for himself. It's always a repurposing. And on the very first day, this boy who is dirt poor willingly is like, hey, do you want some of the little sandwich that I have? Mm-hmm. And just without knowing anything about this boy, is ready to give. And I think he just has such a pure, pure heart. Obviously, he has his moments where we're like, come on, Ron, Lavender Brown, what are you doing? But he, just the whimsy and the light and the love in him from the very beginning, being excited to go to Hogwarts and making friends, it just warms my heart. Hufflepuff energy, for sure.
100%, mate. Yes, absolutely. I feel like Ron gets a bit of a bad rap. Like, a lot of people focus on his flaws and his problems and his moments where he has like his sort of his worst moments. Yeah. And I feel like it's so easy to forget not even his best moments, but just his regular moments are moments of love and compassion and friendship and support. Like, and I feel like it's because it's so blasé and throwaway. Mm. I feel like people so easily overlook them and just go to his sort of downfalls.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, if we were to do that with every character, then there wouldn't be anyone to love. We have to look at them as a whole piece, because those moments where he or Harry or anyone falters and isn't at their best makes their wonderful moments so much more pure and beautiful. And Ron is such a loving character. You know, he exudes love, and we definitely need to focus on it more.
100%. Absolutely. So before we wrap up, I've got a few questions that I ask all of my guests, which I think are quite interesting. So the first one is, imagine you're in charge of Hogwarts, but you have to eliminate a house entirely from the school. Which house are you cutting?
Oh, that is very difficult.
Before you answer, what house are you?
I'm a Hufflepuff.
You're a Hufflepuff. Okay.
The biggest Hufflepuff.
I feel like Hufflepuffs in particular struggle with this question, actually, because it's removing an entire house.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, no, I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. My first thought, though, was Gryffindor, simply because the narrative of the story is a Gryffindor story. Mm-hmm. They could have retitled the franchise a Gryffindor story. But in that, I also think that you could break apart Gryffindor and find within them a way to put them in other houses. Not to say that it's the most disposable house, but I feel like Hermione, you could, Hermione put her in Ravenclaw. You could put some people in Slytherin. So I'm going to go with Gryffindor.
Okay. I feel like that's actually the most popular answer for that question. I feel like, So don't worry. No one's going to come for you. Your Hufflepuff card is still intact. I feel like the characters are, because they're all the main characters are in Gryffindor, they're so multifaceted, they're so fleshed out that you could sort them elsewhere pretty mm-hmm. comfortably, as opposed to like, if you look at the most prominent Hufflepuffs, for example, we don't know enough about them to know where to put them besides exactly. where they are, right?
Yes. And we always have that kind of, well, where are we going to put them? Hufflepuff. That
Hufflepuff. It's the miscellaneous thing. House.
Hey.
I love it. Good answer. Next question. Imagine you can do magic, but you can only do one spell for the rest of your life. What spell do you want to pick?
Accio.
It's everyone's answer. It's a great one.
It's such like a lazy answer in that I'm like, oh, I need that Accio to be able to just transport anything you need to yourself would be amazing. That being said, also being able to apparate would be great, but I think yep. with Accio.
It's interesting you say about being lazy, because I've asked almost like 20 people this question now, and I've noticed of everyone who picks Accio, which is the vast majority, they're split pretty much 50-50 and a half. One half pick Accio because they're lazy, like you've said. The other half pick Accio because they're disorganized. They right. lose things. They don't know where things are. And so they use it to like summon it to them. And it's so interesting to see that split.
Tells you a lot about their character right there.
100%. Although I am surprised not more people pick Reparo, because I feel like that's equally like clumsy people would want to repair a lot of things.
Absolutely. The amount of money that you could save. Like I instantly thought of that scene where Dumbledore just fixes the whole house. Like, house repairs? Don't even worry about it. Fixed.
Oh my gosh, that's so true. I've never thought about it on that scale before, actually. I always think, if I broke my glasses or smashed my phone screen. But you're right. If like we had a storm on Friday and a tree fell down into like our front garden and like broke like some fencing and some shrubs and stuff. If I could do Reparo, like that would be no big deal whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, never think about it on that scale.
Anything like fixing wise ever again, which would be great.
100%. Good answer. Okay, next question. Imagine you can get a magical tattoo that moves in the same way that like the portraits and the pictures and stuff do. Cool. What kind of moving tattoo would you like?
I feel like I would like a creature. I really love animals. And in particular, Care of Magical Creatures would be a class that I would love.
So Hufflepuff.
Yeah, right. So I think it'd be like cool. Like so I've got a dragon tattoo here on my arm, but like if that dragon could like move and like breathe fire and stuff, that would be so cool. So I'm gonna definitely go with some sort of a creature tattoo.
That would be really cool. If you had other flammable tattoos around your body as well and it could like set them on fire.
Now we're talking. Someone love needs to that. Figure out how to do this.
100%. Very cool. Okay, one final thing that I'm trying to do. It's a new segment only from the last couple of episodes. I'm trying to get my guests to do an impression of their favorite character to give us an outro for the podcast. So if you could thank people for listening with your best impression of your favorite character.
Okay. Ooh, favorite character Sirius, but I don't know if I can do a Sirius impression. So I'm going to go for a Hagrid impression.
Perfect.
I'd just like to thank you all for coming and joining us and talking today. And know that you should go home and you should eat lots of snacks, eat some tea cakes, not rock cakes, because you need to take care of your teeth. And tune in next time. We look forward to seeing you.
Amazing. You know what? I always thought people who weren't from the UK would struggle with the Hagrid accent, but that was pretty good. That was really, really decent.
Thank you.
No worries. Thank you so much for joining me, Ryan. Is there anything you want to plug before we dip out?
Go and check out Brett's channel. a lot of amazing content, and I so enjoy everything you do. I love the Harry Potter quizzes so much. And if you've got the time and you're a Harry Potter fan, be sure to check out mine too. Come hang out with Sirius Black.
Amazing. What's your handle?
Ryan J. Burdett.
Perfect. Amazing. Thank you so much. And please come back for another episode in the future.
Would love to. It was a pleasure.